Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Fantasy Focus Football. They tape every Monday through Friday live on Twitter. Be sure to check it out if you are interested in the very best analysis in the game, or if you're just ashamed of how you did last year in your own league. You can download and subscribe to Fantasy Focus Football now, as well as the right time, wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, we're going to get you caught up on the bubble. The NBA Finals are here. Also, Doc Rivers. Well, I mean, he might be here, but he ain't there no more. They're being on his job. And your story is about the video game cheat. But first... Hey, man, let me explain something to you right fast about how much different the world is now versus what it was when I was a youngster. Gabe, last night we had the game between the Kansas City Chiefs and the Baltimore Ravens. We also had a game between what is, for right now, for my money, the two best quarterbacks in the NFL. And I don't know if you noticed this, if you really take a moment to think about this. For my money, this is the first time ever that the two best quarterbacks in the NFL were black. Like, I can't think of any other time that that's been the case. Like, this is the single most high-profile matchup of black quarterbacks that there's been. Now, like, you've had, like, for example, the 2004 NFC Championship game, where it was Michael Vick and Donovan McNabb. That was a big deal. But those two dudes weren't the two best quarterbacks in the NFL at the time. I think both of them were probably top 10 at the moment, but they weren't the two best. Like, that was a thing that mattered. This game that they played on Monday night with Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, I am trying to explain to you youngsters, like, Gabe, you are in the age range that would not be able to grasp this, on top of, you know, not being black. But I'm telling you, if this was like 1989, I'm not sure how many of us would have gone to work on Monday. We'd have had Mahomes and Lamar Jackson playing. Cats would have been even picking sides to a degree, probably saying some things about Patrick Mahomes that would have been wildly unfair and presumptuous just to jump on board with the Lamar train. I'm just telling you, there was a different time. We ain't even got that many black quarterbacks now, to be honest. Like, I'm actually looking at a bunch of y'all and wondering how it was that y'all was raised. Like, we got to a point, me and Dominique talk about this, Foxworth, we talk about this a lot, because he always says that I'm at a point in my journey where I'm able to be more critical of black quarterbacks than he has, because he's still so damn happy that we got a few, right? Like, I'm the one that'll tell you, I'm still not that wild about Deshaun Watson. I think he's good, but I don't think he's great in the ways that other people talk about. I don't know if I'd have been willing to say something like that in 1991, man. We just didn't have a situation where we could just be letting them go like that. No, man, yeah, like, let the white folks tell the truth. That's where we would have been. I'd have been talking about Deshaun Watson like they be talking about Josh Allen, where they just completely forget all the bad stuff he does because they want him to be good so damn bad. Now, I understand why we wanted the black quarterbacks to be good. It had to be. One of them do bad, y'all might not let none of them come back. Josh Allen could come out here and do all this ridiculous stuff. They'll keep drafting white dudes forever and ever and ever. I don't know why y'all need to lie about that man in that way. In fact, Gabe, as we're here, I've been arguing with people this morning about it. I'm not saying Josh Allen stinks, but he does stinky things. And they be acting like this stuff just never comes up. Have you ever seen a fan base more invested in somebody being good than they are with Josh Allen? Like, I never saw them find a way to shine up Tyrod's shortcomings, which certainly existed. You never saw that. That dude got into the playoffs for the first time in 20 years. A literal whole ass 20 years. Well, my bad, 19. It was 19. It wasn't a whole ass 20 years. It was 19. But all the same, these cats be out here lying about that dude. They blew a 28-3 lead this weekend. 28-3 lead and got the win on a terrible, terrible pass interference call. I'm sure Saints fans enjoyed it because it was the Rams getting caught with a bogus pass interference call. You know, it probably makes them feel better about that time they thought they was going to the Super Bowl and instead they lost. Lost. The last chance you had to win a Super Bowl with a quarterback that could throw the ball a little bit far. Now that dude, he might as well be throwing underhand. Anyway, with the black quarterbacks, that's where we might have been. But like Watson, nah, I don't think Watson's that good. I don't think he's bad, right? I don't blame him for extending him anything like that. But I don't love him. Like, we could be honest about him in that way because we had reached a point where we had enough black quarterbacks where we didn't have to claim them all. Like, you don't remember Tony Banks, do you, Gabe?
Tony who?
You shouldn't, just to be clear, right? Tony Banks went to Purdue. He started off with the Rams, and then he went to the Ravens. And so he started the season in 2000 as the Ravens quarterback, and then they benched him for Trent Dilfer. And Tony Banks has got to be salty about that because Trent Dilfer stunk just like Tony Banks stunk. Like, whoever the quarterback on that team was going to be would have got a Super Bowl. He would have been Super Bowl champion, Tony Banks. You know what I'm saying? Like, he could have been carrying that all the way around. Instead, he got benched for Trent Dilfer. But anyway, I remember one time I was talking to my daddy about Tony Banks, and he was adamant. Hey, that Banks boy can play. He wasn't letting it go. I'm not sure I have ever heard my dad say anything bad about a black quarterback. Not even the ones that he thought was a little bit too kind to the white man. Nope. He ain't said a bad word about a black quarterback yet. We wasn't at that point. And so people can kind of see it as progress, maybe, that we've gotten to the point where we got these two quarterbacks that are in the Monday Night Football game, probably the two best quarterbacks in the league, and nobody feels the need to bring it up, right? I have not progressed that far. This is a big deal that we have those two dudes out there. And you know how you know it's a big deal, Gabe? Dan told me about this. They had radio promos trying to say not only was it the two best quarterbacks in the league in that game, it was also the two best kickers in the league in that game. Yes. Nah, man, NFL's got this tricky thing, man. They're running out of white dudes to hold on to. Because as black as the NFL has gotten, the quarterback position, especially at the top, always remain white. Like, they always had white dudes for you to hold on to. Why else you think the Sunday night game was Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers, neither of whom was that good last year, and the Monday night game was the two best quarterbacks in the league? Like, can you imagine a circumstance under which Brady Manning would ever be the Monday night game, or like that game in the, you know, in the pecking order of the games they get chosen? Somebody would have been fighting to keep that game. That bowl, the Brady Manning bowl, is not going to get thrown. But this is the thing I've been talking about with the NFL that's going to be interesting to watch. They've sold white quarterbacks. Like, that's been a significant part of the marketing of this game, is that the NBA is considered to be a black league. All right. The NFL is not much less black than the NBA is. It really, think about this. The Heat got five white dudes out there, right? Is there any NFL team with that percentage of whiteness?
And you're talking about the whole roster too, as opposed to like just the starters or like just the faces that you like associate with the team.
Yeah, right. But what I'm saying is the NFL is about as black as the NBA is. Like, it's really not that crazy to look at it that way. It's about as black as the NBA is. We got a small handful of positions that they still got white dudes out here playing, right? Like on defense. I mean, I'm not saying Nick Bosa doesn't exist. You know what I'm saying? I'm just telling you, we don't have a whole lot of positions where white dudes are even out there. But they got quarterback. And quarterback has been the visible place. And the league has held on to pushing these basically venerable white quarterbacks. Like, all these dudes are old. The white quarterbacks, and we talked about this before, that there's like, after Matt Ryan and Matt Stafford, Matt Ryan's 08, Matt Stafford's 09, after that, this league ain't really been producing good white quarterbacks. Like, I mean, I think that's a big part of why you see people pushing so hard for Josh Allen. I don't even think people realize that they're actually doing this. But the good white quarterbacks coming in the league, it ain't happening for whatever reason. Think about who the last, like, the white quarterbacks that have come in recently. Like, Joe Burrow, I think this thing is going to work out pretty well for him, right? But let me go back to, like, 2017, Mitch Trubisky. I mean, I don't want to blame white folks for that. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just all about him. But still, that was the one that was coming in for that year. 2018, Baker Mayfield, Josh Allen, Josh Rosen, Sam Darnold. Well, right now, the best of them is Josh Allen, and he is crazy flawed, crazy, crazy, crazy flawed in spite of all the talent that he happens to possess. Did we get one last year, Gabe? I don't even remember. Oh, Daniel Jones. Don't nobody want that? But you see how Giants fans and everybody else like just tries to talk themselves so hard into the idea of how good these cats are? We don't really have white quarterbacks coming into the league. And it's going to be interesting to see how the NFL promotes this or how they carry this, because this is not in line with what the business model has been. Like, how are people going to then view the league when everything they've done and the imaging and everything they've had around it, it ain't going to exactly fit the same way when it's Lamar Jackson out here with them braids as a quarterback. You know, Lamar Jackson out here playing quarterback, and they haven't tried to make him code switch yet. Like, they tried to get Cam to do it. It hadn't really worked. But there was clearly an effort to try to get him in that direction. Lamar Jackson, they're like, nah, baby, just be you. Just be you. It's a whole different scenario. And that's why I really did think that game last night, just the fact that it happened, was a bigger deal than I truly believe that people realized it was. It is, in fact, I think, a sign of where the NFL is going. Because the NFL has finally, like, look, man, this is how racism works. Like, if you really want to know, like, subtle ways that racism works that you don't think about, have you ever, in any form of athletic competition, have you ever been able to think of one time, any place where somebody has tried to make the argument that it is better to be slow other than playing quarterback in the NFL? It's the only place where being less athletic in a very basic and significant way was deemed to be worse. Playing quarterback in the NFL. It's the only one, right? Now, I've long said that they ain't going to let it get to the place where there ain't no white quarterbacks, right? Like, we saw what happened in the early part of the 21st century when they realized, oh, man, the speed of the game has reached a place where black quarterbacks may be needed a little bit more because people think black people are faster. And they were like, oh, I guess we'll just have to slow the game down, right? Change the penalty structure to make it much more of a punishment for hitting a quarterback late, hitting a quarterback in the head. It made the pocket a safer place to be, right? You think that's a coincidence? I don't think that's a coincidence. I heard Harry Edwards point that out, and I was like, wow, man, you got a point there. Like, that sort of thing happened. I think that the evolution of the game and the changes to schemes and everything else have made it such that I don't think they're going to be able to do it in that way. What I do think you're just going to wind up saying is a lot more black quarterbacks and a lot more star black quarterbacks. And I think a lot of these changes have happened fast. Like, I mentioned this on Twitter the other day. You realize Dak Prescott was two-time first-team all-SEC quarterback? Two-time first-team all-SEC. And was drafted in the fourth round? Okay? He had the size. He had the arm. He was athletic enough. Like, he had a great runner, but he's athletic enough. And that dude got drafted in the fourth round? That wouldn't happen now. I mean, Jalen Hurts, who I do not think is going to be a good NFL quarterback. Look, I've seen two different teams with monster talent all around them, and their ceiling was Jalen Hurts' limitation as a passer. That tells me this isn't going to work in the NFL. I could be wrong, but I just don't see it working for him. But somebody took him in the second round. Like the game has flipped, okay? This is all going to change up. This game right here, I feel like as much as people were hyped up about the fact that the game was going to happen, we should have been going into that game really talking about this as like a sign of the revolution. Like, in a lot of ways, that game to me is comparable to the song that UGK did with Outkast, produced by Juicy J and DJ Paul, called International Players Anthem. And so here's what International Players Anthem was to me. Three words. The South won. We've been picked on in the rap game. You had people talking about how we wasn't good enough, talking about how we was too basic, talking about how the music wasn't smart enough, everything else, everything everybody has said about us, right? But in the end, you could feel it, right? And so year after year after year, right? Like, you had the No Limit thing come around. I don't think they were that good, but whatever, it happened. Cash Money, that was the bomb. You had that build up. Then you had Lil Jon come around, and that started to pick things up a little bit. You go a little farther down the line, you start getting to Jeezy. That was a big turning point. Like, all of these things happened, and that respect and that understanding that the South had something going on, it got bigger and bigger and bigger. And then finally, you had the two best groups ever from the South joining forces with, maybe you could make the argument, the third best group of the South in 3-6 Mafia doing the production, putting together one of the greatest songs of all time. It was standing before the world and saying to everybody, the South won. It was the moment that it all became undeniable. It was right there. Like, this is us. We are here. And I think that you can make a comparison to that's the way that we should have been going into the Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson game. These two dudes are reigning MVPs. They don't play the same way, right? Like, Mahomes, I mean, there's plenty of white dudes that we could point to that play in a fashion that's similar to Patrick Mahomes. Like, he's athletic enough. I mean, we've never seen anybody with that arm, obviously. But in terms of, like, his style of play, Now, Lamar Jackson, we talk about something different, right? Like, I mean, honestly, we don't like Michael Vick's the closest thing we have to somebody that we could compare to him. But the two reigning MVPs playing on Monday night, man, talk to them old heads about the story of that night. They thought that Jeff Street Joe Gilliam was going to play on Monday Night Football. Joe Gilliam went to Tennessee State, and he was the quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He was the quarterback before Terry Bradshaw. And so he's the quarterback. And Monday Night Football, you got to remember, we didn't have all this information going through all the time, right? But it was Monday Night Football, and I think Joe Gilliam was the first black starting quarterback in the NFL. And everybody was ready because Joe was going to be starting on Monday Night Football. And then they turned on the TV, and it was Terry Bradshaw who was starting. That was 40-something years ago. If you ask my daddy about that right now, you will still hear the heartbreak because everybody was tuning in to watch Joe. Like, it was that big a deal for black folks that they had that game. And so we're far removed from that, but I really did look at the idea that those two dudes were out there and playing last night. Like, yo, this is really, really, really a big deal. And don't trick yourself into believing that somehow there's been progress to the point where you don't need to even talk about this. Like, just having a black dude out there was pretty cool. But I do think there's something to the idea that the game evolved and changed enough that we reached a point with these two dudes, maybe 1 and 2 in the league, and they out here. Those are the two best teams in the NFL, and they got black quarterbacks. And they kind of undeniable, too. And I want to make this point that they're undeniable in spite of the fact that Lamar Jackson played poorly last night. And I don't think there's any argument against the fact that he played poorly. And Gabe, you started to see it now. People start to talk about that can you figure him out type thing, right? They're breaking out the stats that when Lamar's teams have had a lead at halftime, they haven't lost. But when they've been behind at halftime, they haven't won. And I feel like if you watched that game last night, it was obvious what did the Ravens in. And it was coaching. Greg Roman, the offensive coordinator, got his ass handed to him. Wink Martindale, the defensive coordinator, he got his ass handed to him last night. I'm going to tell you this, how the defensive coordinator got his ass handed to him. He got his ass handed to him because he just likes to send the house at people. Like, his way of generating pressure is to send a bunch of people there. You are not going to beat the Chiefs if you can't get pressure with four people. It's not happening. It's not happening. You're not going to be able to check all those dudes if you're sending 5, 6, 7 people, and in a lot of cases, 8. You're not going to be able to make that happen against Kansas City with that strategy. You're not. Like, I don't see how you could watch that game and think anything otherwise. And that was the Chiefs out there with, like, they put old Mike Remmers out there on the field. Go watch what Von Miller did to Mike Remmers in that Super Bowl. They have Mike Remmers out there on the field, and Baltimore still feeling like they got to send 7 people. Like, that was coaching. He's slicing you up every time you send all these people here, and you keep on doing it, right? Then on the other side, this problem that Baltimore has with Roman, who I think has gotten a little too much credit. Or I'll put it like this. There's a reason why Greg Roman keeps doing this great work with quarterbacks but don't never get offered no head coach job. Seriously, Roman coordinated offense with Colin Kaepernick, went to a Super Bowl. Tyrod Taylor went to a Pro Bowl and then coordinated the Lamar Jackson offense. Like, this guy clearly seems to be on the vanguard of something, right? But here's what happens whenever the Ravens get down. And this is why that halftime stat, there's something to it, but it's not a reflection, I don't think, of Lamar Jackson. They've got this crazy explosive offense, right? The offense is explosive when they just run it the way that they normally run it. Whenever they get behind, all of a sudden, Roman is like, well, guess we got to start throwing the ball on first and second down now. And you don't have to do that because you got Lamar Jackson. Right? Like, think about how many big plays you see them rack up in the running game. Like, you're behind in the first half. You don't have to do that. The Rams were down 28-3 to the Bills, and they kept on running their regular old offense, and they came all the way back. You didn't have to throw everything out the window. And in the games that I've watched, when the Ravens wind up getting behind early, the game against Tennessee in the playoffs fits this description also. They throw it out the window when they get behind early. And you don't have to do that. Like, that game wasn't anything about where Lamar is in terms of being a pocket passer. Go watch the first two games. You see the progression that he's made as a pocket passer. He looked great in those first two games. He doesn't handle pressure well. Like, there's that. I mean, that's something he's going to have to improve. Like, he's not Josh Allen in terms of how poorly he handles pressure, but he doesn't handle pressure well. Like, that's what he's going to have to do. But the coaches for Baltimore on Monday night, we're not putting their players in position to succeed. And the worst thing you want to have in this world is a defense that can't get itself off the field and an offense that keeps putting them right back out there. And that's what it was, right? So, yeah, put it on Lamar. There are things to point to that absolutely fall on him, but that was coaching. They absolutely 100% got outcoached in the course of that game. These are still the two best quarterbacks in the league. And we're going to watch these dudes play probably one way or another year after year after year, the same way we saw Brady and Manning play year after year after year. Last night was the future. Even if it wasn't necessarily a memorable game, it was the future. And that is a future that I am looking forward to. Oh, Gabe, the NBA Finals are here. How you feeling, Laker fan?
Job's not done yet. That's all I'm saying.
Y'all go win one for Kobe?
I mean, I don't... Have you gotten a little tired of the let's win this one for Kobe yet?
I was actually thinking that I've been surprised that I haven't heard more of it.
Ooh, if you listen to any sort of, like, Laker post-game stuff like I do, not necessarily even, like, television, but, like, oh, Frank Vogel in the locker room... The AD shot that he hit that game winner.
I do remember that.
That was Kobe. Kobe was in you when you made that shot. Oh, yeah. This one, this game, that was for Kobe. So it's kind of like you keep moving the goalposts.
Right.
And everything was for Kobe. It's a big deal. I get that. But it's almost like disassociating this team from its good performance and just saying that it's all about Kobe, right?
Yeah, I think that's a fair point to make. For me, at least. Given everything else that's going on in the world, like, it's kind of crazy to think Kobe died, what, 7 months ago? Like, that's it. It feels like it was 3 years ago, you know? So, like, for me, there is something cool to the idea that for them, where nothing feels recent anymore, that this can still feel recent. And I think that this is something that'll bring people, like, a measure of joy or whatever it is. So, like, I do agree with you, though, that people tend to go too far in the way that they talk about these things. But nah, like, at least for right now, like, and I guess I'm watching more just national stuff, and I don't feel like they're really, like, being overwhelming in the Kobe discussion for the national stuff. So it kind of works, and I feel like that's a happier story than what I think is also maybe the most interesting story, which is, you know, I told you about this before. Pat Riley got to beat the Celtics in the conference finals. If he could get to beat the Lakers and LeBron in the NBA Finals, I just can't imagine there being anybody having more of an FU tour through the NBA playoffs than Pat Riley. Like, what's beating that? If he was a different person, I'd be like, now's the time to retire. But Pat Riley ain't about to retire. Like, I mean, that's not going down, but that would be the time for Pat Riley to hang it up and just be like, nah, man, I'm out of here. I have nothing left to do in this game. Did you watch game six, the Celtics and the Heat?
I did, yeah.
Yo, Adebayo turned it on in a way that I did not know if he could. Like, I'm really looking forward to the Adebayo-Anthony Davis matchup. Like, that one's going to be a great one to me for us to see. I mean, he gonna run all that damn zone. You know how I feel about that, especially since the Lakers only got like two good players. You know, like, they gonna run that damn zone, and I hate that. But I want to see Adebayo matched up with Anthony Davis. I also want to note, I don't know what it is about former players who have broadcasting jobs, but they be out here calling these dudes from other, like, Adebayo is not, like, quote unquote from another country, but for purposes of this discussion, he is. They be calling them dudes from other countries any old thing. Like, the homie Perk be on TV calling Adebayo out of the bayou. Like, I think I've heard him call him out of the bayou, and he says it like he's been practicing. Like, no one seems to have let Perk know it's Adebayo. It ain't there. Chuck and Shaq, especially Shaq, Shaq be calling him anything. The European cats, they ain't got it. They don't get it no better. Like, these dudes, the former players just be calling cats any old thing in the world. I don't know why. Adebayo is really not a hard one. But, you know, Perk always be sounding frustrated with the old TV. You know, Adebayo, like, damn, dog, it's right there. It sounds just like it's spelled, I promise. You know, and me, you know, the dude with the African name, you know, I guess I need to be glad Perk say my name right. Right? Like, that's all I need. I need to be glad Shaq, he says my name right. Okay, cool. That's where I need to be glad. And I think Charles can say my name right, but he probably just calls me Bo. Now that I think about it, I don't think he's ever said my name. Anyway, Adebayo is monstrous. It's going to be interesting with Jimmy, too, because at some point, Jimmy got to score. Like, Jimmy's been out there doing all the Jimmy stuff, but, like, at some point, he's going to have to actually be able to score. And then, all right, I try not to traffic too much into internet gossip, right? Like, I like to give you things that are proven. So I'm going to stick to the things that I know, all right? The things that I know. Gabe, before they went into the bubble, what did I tell people was a distinct possibility that could happen?
You told people that there was a high likelihood of cross-pollination.
Yes.
In between female friends.
That's right. I told people, the thing you got to remember about these dudes in the NBA is they just about dating all the same women, right? I explained to you how it goes. It's a Tupac song with Nate Dogg on the hook, except I don't like the words that they use to make the point. But the point was the same. The point held up. Every other city they go, every other video, there's something similar to that, right? Like, there's something in line with that. I don't like the way that they made the point, but I understand what the point was. And I was trying to explain to y'all just kind of how this world works, okay? I tried. Now, I don't know what the terms of anybody's relationships are, were, or anything else. However, there seems to be a young lady who appeared on Instagram with Kyle Kuzma back in the day, who now appears on Instagram with Tyler Hero. And now she is in the bubble. I think she's, what was it? Long-standing established friends? Is that what they called it? Right? And we might need to double check if she's in the bubble. You can look it up. I think she is. But I do know I seen something on Instagram with her in a Kyle Kuzma jersey. And now she has at least Instagram documentation of being friends with Tyler Hero. So, in case those cats are really intense in a matchup, now you understand why. The game within the game. I told you the story about Austin Rivers and Dexter Strickland, right? Ever tell you that one?
No, you haven't. But the game within the game.
The game within the game. And this is what I'm talking about with the game within the game. So my man Lavelle Moten, head coach of North Carolina Central, he and Jerry Stackhouse and another one of their partners used to run a summer league in Durham. And a lot of the kids who, like the cats that were in college, like especially the incoming freshmen, would come and play in the league, right? And so Austin Rivers is playing in the league. This is the summer before Austin Rivers' freshman year. He comes in, he's playing in the league. You got to remember Austin Rivers is like number one player in America, all right? And you also have to remember, especially then, people didn't like Austin Rivers at all. All right. So Austin Rivers is playing in his game, and he's matched up against Dexter Strickland. You may not remember Dexter Strickland, but Dexter Strickland was a pretty big deal when he was in college, or at the very least, like when he got there. Like at one point, he was in high school, he was number one player in America. He came in as a five-star recruit playing at Carolina. Like he was a good player, but not a great player. And so he and Austin Rivers were matched up. To this day, the single most intense one-on-one matchup I have ever witnessed with my own two eyes. I've never seen anything like this before. And Austin was giving him the work. Like, it wasn't an equal back and forth. Austin was giving him the business. The business. And I was like, damn, that Carolina Duke rivalry already getting cracking? Austin ain't even played a game yet? Then we found out that actually Dexter Strickland was dating Austin Rivers' sister at the time. The game within the game. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So just in case, all of a sudden, like, why is Tyler Hero taking a shot every time down the floor? Why is Kyle? The game within the game. Perhaps, because again, all I know is people taking pictures on Instagram, right? So protected myself just in case the game within the game is not the game that we think it is. I would just like to note, let's just say, given what we know about both of those gentlemen, I'm surprised that they would be dating the same women. But hey, there they are. And here we have it. The bubble scenario that I tried to tell y'all was possible has arrived. Also, while Tyler Hero is becoming like on superstar status, boy, Mike Breen is so excited watching Tyler Hero play.
Is this something that the Lakers could use to their advantage in terms of like matching the two of them up? Hero, go and beat us now. Because he averaged 20 points a game in the Eastern Conference Finals, but calling himself a bucket, all that sort of stuff.
But you can do it the other way too. And let's be honest here. Kyle Kuzma, do you think he can guard Tyler Hero?
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, put him on him, and then Hero is not going to be himself, you know?
He's going to be acting a fool. Or he's
going
to score 45 because Kyle Kuzma can't guard him. Like, you look at that. Like, here's the thing. Can the Heat use it to their advantage with Kyle Kuzma coming down the other way?
Some players play good angry.
And I'm just saying, you're just hoping that it only goes in one direction.
Yes.
That's the only way that you want this to go. I mean, I think the Lakers are going to win this series. Like, I like what the Heat have going, but I mean, they got the two best players, man. But the Heat have somebody who can guard Anthony Davis. Like, Adebayo is big man and tall man and little man. Like, he is incredible. Like, it's really hard to describe how good it is that he has become. But them other dudes for the Lakers going to have to show up, man. You know, like, he going to throw a lot of that cowardly zone at them, which is going to require these other dudes to make shots, to make moves, to get to the places that they need to be in. He got a lot of dudes who is like, yo, this is the thing we need you to do. We need you to do this. Like, Duncan Robinson, we just need you to shoot, baby. That's all we're requiring of you. Like, I'm looking forward to this. I think it's going to be fun. I, by the way, want to say to the Denver Nuggets, do the Denver Nuggets realize what they did to us? I think it's the Denver Nuggets who did that to us. Let me look and figure out who it is that did this to us. Who played on the 27th? All right. So yeah, the Nuggets did this to us. If the Nuggets had got that series going a little longer, we'd have some counter-programming to this damn debate. Have you been watching any of the commercials for this debate, by the way, that have been on Fox?
No, I have not.
Yo, so like during the Sunday games, you know, they were pushing the debate. Yo, Fox has an app. I think it's called the Super Six or something like that. Like, it looks like a gambling type of app. And they were pushing that for the debate. Like, how many times will Trump call Biden Sleepy Joe or something? Like, something about Sleepy Joe was one of the things that they showed on a screen cap to demonstrate what they're going to be doing with that. Like, Fox was pushing that like it was Monday Night Football. This is not going to be a high water mark in the evolution of the American society, this thing here tonight. I don't know if I ain't made no call. Like, what? Watch it for what? Who are you, undecided voter? The hell you waiting on, right? Like, whichever way you going to go, I feel like that decision been done made. I don't know who's going to turn on that debate and be like, you know what? He got me. Turn me around. Yeah, there we go. No. I personally don't know who that person is. I ain't going to be that person or whatever it is, but I would have liked it if they stretched that out. By the way, I talked real long on this. I want to say something right fast. I don't think I need to go too deeply into it, but I think it's a point worth making. The Ringer did a very interesting story on the political donations of NBA owners. And the story was basically that NBA owners donate politically overwhelmingly to Republican causes and candidates. A lot of people saw that and immediately responded on Twitter, because why read the link on Twitter when you can bang on the headline? Responded, well, duh, of course they donate to Republicans. They just worry about their taxes. But no. What the story pointed out is that the billionaire class typically donates in a more balanced fashion. Like, they typically, because they got so much money, why not, right? Like, they typically do this in a balanced fashion. What they want to be able to do is curry favor with whoever wins, as opposed to try to make somebody win. But overwhelmingly, NBA owners donate to Republican causes. Like, I think it was something like only 5 owners donated at least 20% to both sides of the aisle. Steve Ballmer donated overwhelmingly to the left. Mark Lazary, the Moroccan dude that owns the Bucks, he donated overwhelmingly to the left, but by and large, they all given his money to the right. And this is an important thing, and I think we need to bring up as we get toward the end of this NBA bubble with Black Lives Matter on the floor. They ain't put no money down to do that. Like, that was to appease the labor force. In the end, NBA players are fighting for causes that their owners are fighting to stop. Like, there's no way to pretend that there should be a nonpartisan slant to the things that the players want. But the truth is, that's not the case. You're going to find that out when you watch that debate tonight. You know, like, if you're like, yo, I don't think the police should shoot black people for bad reasons, you're going to find out that's a partisan issue. Like, that's going to be a thing tonight. That's the thing that's going to rise up. And the owners in their real lives are absolutely opposed to the players on these matters. And we talked about that before, Gabe, where I was like, look, man, there's a step further that has to be taken in making this happen. And what worries me is I saw a poll the other day. You remember that, like, after George Floyd, over 50% of people supported Black Lives Matter, like, as a cause, as a movement, whatever. Saw a poll the other day that said the numbers are right back to where they were before. Like, white folks got over it. I don't know if they just started going to work again or whatever it is. I don't know, but white folks got over it, man. The moment passed. It happened. It came and it went. And now we are about 1 month away from this election, and this bubble's about to be over, and Black Lives Matter is going to be off the floor. And the owners are going to be giving their money to Blue Lives Matter. The owners are going to be giving their money to the opposite of that cause. Like, that's where we are. That's where it is. And so I look at this with the players. The push can't stop. The game can't stop. And when does the point come where y'all start looking at your owners and saying, why do you give money to people who oppose us? Make them answer. Because if you don't, we will say that some good things happen in this bubble, but nothing lasting. And that's not the players' fault. It's not because they didn't try. It's not because they did anything wrong. It's not that they should have boycotted or anything else. It will be because the owners do not want the things that the players want. And I just think they should explain why. Tell you this, though. I bet you Doc Rivers out here talking about, I thought Black Lives Mattered. Here I am getting fired. I told you, though, after that series was over, they was going to have to let him go. All right? Like, I mean, I was pretty much on that as it happened, that it didn't seem possible that they were going to be able to keep him. What it sounds like to me, though, is, did you notice we started getting worried about Ty Lue being a front runner for all these other jobs? Like, we heard about him being the front runner at Philly, for example. And then next thing you know, the Clippers, who currently employ Ty Lue, were like, nah, you ain't got to go nowhere, baby. Just stay right here. just stay right here. Because Doc said he ain't see this coming. I, again, thought Doc should have seen this coming, but Doc said he did not see this coming. And look, this is the thing to me about when coaches get fired very often, and I think that people just look at this the wrong way. Firing Doc does not mean that he was the problem. To me, firing Doc means he's been there, 8 years? Okay? He's been there 8 years. Every year, they have chemistry problems. And every year they get stopped short of the conference finals. That'll get you fired. That's about it. He earned a significant amount of goodwill from the way that he handled the Donald Sterling situation, basically helping thwart a player boycott. You know, that earned him probably some more time that he probably wouldn't have gotten otherwise, considering the fact that the current owner of the team is not the guy who hired him, right? Rather than fire him as a coach, they fired him as the president of the operation. When it came time to make that move, like, they gave Doc every chance in the world. And I don't think that Doc did a bad job with the Clippers, but I do think it was about time for Doc to go. If he couldn't figure out how to get those guys to get along last year, then I don't know what was going to make this better in the upcoming year, especially considering that the center of the malcontent seems to be Paul George, with whom Doc has a complicated history. Is that fair to say? You know about that, right?
I was going to say, maybe you have to fill people in, like, remind people of this.
Everybody go ahead and Google it if you don't know. Gabe, if you don't know, go ahead and Google it and then pop in with your reaction. It doesn't matter what I'm saying or what I'm doing at the time. I just want you to pop in with your reaction when you figure out what it is. Anyway, Doc, it was just about time for Doc to go. And that's fine. I still think it was a poorly constructed roster, right? I think the flaws of the roster were the flaws of the roster, but time was about up. Gabe, why your eyes so big?
Damn.
Yeah.
Well, that is something.
Yeah, it's one of those things that you can't really talk about, but you kind of need to.
See, I remember that story happening, but I didn't remember that it was Doc's daughter. And what's nuts about it is that's Seth Curry's wife now that we talked about a couple weeks ago.
Yes.
There wasn't a game within a game situation there.
No, there was not.
But damn, I talk about a game within a game. Talk about a season within a season.
Well, was there a game within a game and we just weren't paying close enough attention? Seth Curry played really well that series, you know? But yeah, it's a lot going on. But Doc, it's so wild. Doc got that championship in 2008, and he was absolutely a positive contributor to that championship. Think about this, because, I mean, I think Doc is a good X's and O's coach, right? I think there's some strategic questions with him, and again, how he manages and interacts with his roster becomes its own question. Kevin Garnett's knee basically ground down to dust in the 2009 playoffs. If that doesn't happen, there's a good chance the Celtics win the championship in 2009. Now, let's say that they don't win the championship in 2009. If Kendrick Perkins doesn't tear his ACL in game 6 in 2010, there's a good chance that the Celtics win the championship in 2010. Yes, Gabe, I'm taking championships away from your Lakers. I see it all over your face. Rondo had his elbow bent out of socket in the 2011 conference finals against Miami. How's it go if that doesn't happen? Right? Like, there's a lot of, they were this closest with the Celtics for Doc to be a guy who has like a bunch of rings. And if you want to know the value of winning rings in terms of the way that you are perceived, Gabe, I don't know if you heard all these people that's out here talking about Eric Spoelstra as a Hall of Famer. Eric Spoelstra is the best coach in the league. Do you know how many times Eric Spoelstra has won 50 games in the NBA?
How many times?
4. Do you know how many times Eric Spoelstra has won 50 games without LeBron James? 0. 0. We making Spo a Hall of Fame coach for winning 2 championships with LeBron James. And not winning 50 games ever otherwise. Now, they made the finals this year, so obviously, like, we'll give them this. But they were the 5 seed in the East. Like, if you went back and looked at it, they were not on pace to win 50 games this year. They weren't. Like, that's the value of it. But Doc, I don't know who you hire him to coach. Like, if you're Philly, do you hire Doc? I don't think so. Your team already can't get along. Doc's teams never get along. Maybe you can make it work in Houston. Maybe.
But Houston and Philly, also 2 teams that notoriously flame out early.
Ah, that's true.
Are you going to bring up like how Doc has had this history of playoff collapses? I don't think that the Philly fans could take that hurt.
No, they could not. Now, I think to a degree, he gets a bit of a bad rap on the quote unquote collapses. All right. So Orlando blew that 3-1 lead to Detroit that year. But come on, man. Right? It's amazing that that Orlando team won 3 games in that series, if we're being honest. The Clippers blew a 3-1 lead. Well, they blew that 2-0 lead. I think it was to the Grizzlies that year in 2013. That was a bad look. That one was a bad look. They blew that 3-1 lead to the Rockets in 2015. I don't put that on Doc. That team just was not deep enough, and they ran out of gas. Like, I mean, that was the one where Josh Smith was raining threes on them at the end for Houston to come back in that game 6. But that was one of the years, and it happened with the Clippers a lot. Their starting lineup was the best lineup in the NBA, and then they just couldn't go to the bench. They just did not have the depth. Now, of course, part of that was on Doc because he constructed the roster, but as Doc the coach, I don't think the collapse was so much on him. This Denver thing, though, that was all on everybody. Everybody this year in that loss to Denver was there. If I'm Doc, I go broadcast. Like, I'd be trying to get in the studio, go talk about these games. He was very good at it, good enough at it that he parlayed it into being a head coach. Like, he made that sort of thing happen, but he had to go. And now next year's Clipper season, whoo, that's going to be tense. Because, I mean, I'm assuming Kawhi will stay. You know, he wanted to be in LA and everything else. Does he? If nobody likes Paul George, does he stay? You already traded away your entire future to get those 2 guys.
And they have opt-outs.
Oh, they're guaranteed to opt out next year. Write it down. What confused me about doing that on the short timetable the way that they did it was it took the Heat adding LeBron James and Chris Bosh to Dwayne Wade in his prime. It took them a legitimate year and a half to really get it together. And you were just so sure that this was going to work. Like, you were just positive that, like, okay, well, we're going to do it. And I don't get blame them for taking the risk. My confusion on both sides was, though, why are you only signing a 2-year deal, especially with Kawhi Leonard? That was the one where I'm like, yo, your leg is a problem. You don't want to lock up your money as long as possible. And for the Clippers, I'm like, if you're giving away all of that, you want to at least have Paul George on the roster for all the years of the draft picks, right? At least. And they didn't. And now we find out the dudes don't even really like playing with each other. Yep, being a Clippers fan, even when it looks good, it still feels like you're rooting for the Clippers.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bomani, this first story, it comes from tech.
I'm Washington Post tech columnist Jeffrey Fowler. I thought I'd seen it all with consumer tech, but Amazon actually made my jaw drop last week when it unveiled its newest Ring security product, a security drone. Called the Always Home Cam, it's a $250 autonomous helicopter that flies around the inside of your house so you can peer in remotely from your phone and possibly scare away intruders. Before you ask, no, this thing doesn't contain lasers for entertaining the cats. Amazon says the idea is to let you use the flying camera to check to see if you left the stove on or a window open. But the scary part is, we know those are not the only ways it can or will be used. What's to stop people from using it to spy on family members or neighbors? Or what if a hacker gains access and uses it to spy on what you do in your bedroom? And Ring is the company that started out making video doorbells and now has partnerships with hundreds of police departments across the U.S. Will they be able to look inside your home too? Amazon says the Always Home Cam is noisy, like all drones, so at least you'd hear it coming. But once again, Amazon's Ring products raise more social questions than the company will address. And Amazon seems not too bothered by its growing reputation as the maker of very creepy technology. The Always Home Cam is supposed to arrive sometime in 2021.
Yo, he said that this was raising questions, like social questions. This is making me ask questions about you, stupid. That's who is making me ask questions about. They're like, yeah, we got this drone so you can see if you left the stove on. What? Maybe you left the window open. And? Are you serious? Like, I'm going to put a drone in my house to keep up with this just in case I made one of these little bitty mistakes? You can't possibly be serious right now. You cannot. Are people really falling for this? Like, I am amazed y'all keep getting these smart speakers and everything else. Like, my brother does it. My brother got the smart speaker in his house. And I'm just like, why? For what? Have you ever been at somebody's house and seen them, like, talk to Alexa and feel like, wow, that really made your life easier? It's always you talking to that to do something that you can do with this phone. The phone isn't enough of a leash, right? Like what? I'm going to put a drone in my house and give this stuff to Amazon. Like, have you watched The Social Dilemma yet? You need to do that. I watched it over the weekend. It's low-key terrifying, right? But what's terrifying about it is they're learning us. Like, all this information and all this stuff that we're giving them and all, like, the data that we are providing them, what they're using it for is just to manipulate us, right? They're using it to learn us and to figure out your moods and to figure out what does you right, what does you wrong, and everything else, and then how to send you messages based on how it moves you, based on where you are at those times. It is really, 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 really scary what it is that they're talking about here. And y'all gonna go out here and get a drone to fly around your house just in case you left something at the crib. Like, if you get this, everything that happens to you is your own stupid ass fault. Everything, like any data they get off of you out of that drone that you put into your house. Like, it's kind of like, to me, it's kind of like the label on a pack of cigarettes, right? Hey, man, I get where people were coming from. Y'all didn't tell us that this would give us cancer, right? Totally understand. I also understand the counter argument. You may not know it was going to give you cancer. You knew it wasn't no good idea, right? Like, you might not have known what exactly the bad part of the idea was, but you knew that wasn't no good idea. I think that's a fair argument to make on that side. That's how I feel about this. Even if they don't tell you they're giving your information to the police, you did a thought of it. But they would never treat me like that, stupid ass. And don't invite me to your house if you got all that shit in there neither.
This next story comes from Science.
My name is Laurel Wamsley. I'm a reporter at NPR. This week, I wrote about the story of a rat who won a major animal prize for heroism. The winner, his name is Magawa. He's an African giant pouched rat. And he was trained, along with other rats of his kind, to sniff out landmines. So he grew up in Tanzania, and then at the age of two, he and the other rats were moved to Cambodia, where they were trained by a nonprofit called Apopo to sniff out landmines. So these rats have terrible eyesight, but they have great noses, and they are trained to be able to pick up the smell of TNT. And so they are carefully trained, and then they are able to go out into a field where there are suspected landmines and identify exactly where the landmines are. Their light body weight means that they don't set off the mine. So they walk all across these fields, and then they've been specially trained to, when they smell that explosive scent, to sort of give a little scratch and notify their handlers that there is a landmine there, and then the mine can be safely removed. So Magawa is apparently amazing at doing this, even better than his rat colleagues. And so he has already cleared more than 1.5 million square feet of land from landmines in Cambodia. And for this, he won a major award this week from the British charity PDSA. They gave him their award for animal heroism, and that award is a little tiny gold medal that fits onto his work harness. It's adorable.
You know what I take from that as I listen to it? This just tells you how much our society dislikes rats, because they would never ask a dog to do that. You think they would ever roll the dice on a dog getting blown up by a landmine? Oh, no, sirree, Bob. Normally when we need something sniffed out, we get a dog. No, we love dogs too much. Can you imagine what would happen if you was out here as a researcher and we found out that you had 10 dogs get killed because they got blown up in the field because they was out here sniffing landmines? Oh, man, that'd be front page news. Instead, these rats out here doing the Lord's work. Ain't nobody about to put him on the front page of the paper. Ain't nobody about to be out here talking about what a hero he is and how cute he is and anything else. Nah, they're just like, yo, that's a rat. And one day that rat gonna die because he's gonna get the landmine thing wrong. And then all of a sudden, it's gonna be bad news for him. Ain't gonna be no funerals. Ain't nobody gonna sing no songs. There will be no slow montages. That ain't happening. You're not going to see it. It's not going to happen, because that's how y'all feel about rats. That's it. But if this story was about a dog, everybody would know these dogs' names.
That's exactly what could happen, though. This rat was a national hero.
I'm talking about with us. I mean, like Cambodia, I feel like over there, I don't know the animal hierarchy over there. Like, I know in the Chinese New Year, there is a year of the rat, right? Like, they seem to treat the rats a little better over there. Over here, they don't do that.
Did you see the little medal?
I did.
Yeah, it's delightful, right?
Good for him. Good for him.
With the rat, though, I mean, the Laurel's point that they're light enough that they don't get blown up. That, yes. You're not going to find a dog that small.
I mean, while I understand the point, they would never ask a dog to do such dangerous work. At least we wouldn't. I don't know how about over there, but in the U.S., we would never ask a dog to do that.
Is there another animal that's that small that's also would be considered smart enough to be able to do something like that? I feel like rats are smarter than rabbits.
Ah, good question. What about squirrels, maybe? It's a good question. That's it. I'm just saying, in America, maybe we need to start treating our rats better. All we do is ask them to take drugs that could kill them and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? You ever seen any press conference in America where they gave a rat a medal?
No, this is the first one I've seen of it, which is why I made the show.
I tell you this, though. I live in New York. You ever had a rat rub up against your ankle? You wouldn't want to give him no damn medal either. That's the worst feeling in the world.
All right, this last one is a crime story, but it's a sports story also, too.
Michael Babcock, TMZ Sports. Joe Montana's 9-month-old granddaughter was nearly kidnapped. Terrifying situation for Joe, who was hanging out Saturday afternoon around 5 p.m. with his wife, Jennifer, at their Malibu, California home, when a 39-year-old woman, a complete stranger, wandered from off the street through an unlocked door into Joe's house and into the room where his grandchild was sleeping in a playpen. The woman grabbed the baby. Thankfully, Joe and Jennifer heard the commotion and rushed to the room where they confronted the woman. At first, they tried to de-escalate the situation verbally, but the woman would not let go of the baby. At that point, Jennifer was forced to physically confront the woman, and a scuffle ensued. Jennifer was able to wrestle the baby away, and that's when the woman made a run for it. She booked out of the house, and Joe gave chase. By pure luck, there happened to be an LA County Sheriff's deputy on the block working an unrelated case. Joe flagged down the deputy, who began to search for the woman. Shortly after, he found her and put her under arrest without incident. She was arrested for kidnapping as well as for breaking into Joe's house. She was taken to the LA County Jail, where she has been held on a $150,000 bail. Joe thanked his fans and his followers for their support, and the baby, thankfully, was not hurt. Even at 64, still Joe cool, because later on that night, Joe and Jennifer went to Nobu in Malibu and had a nice sushi dinner.
Yo, people keep talking about Joe Montana in this story when it sounds pretty clear to me that the hero is Jennifer. She the one that did the dirty work, right? Joe the one chasing a woman down the block afterwards. Who knows? Maybe Joe was like, yo, you know, I got to leave this between the ladies. I can't have it out here in the news that I'm out here, you know, roughing women up, even in spite of this circumstance. Or what if Joe Montana hit us with the basic equivalent of, you know, I was going to tackle her, but I had this hot coffee in my hands. You know how that goes, right? Maybe it was that one. I don't know. I would also like to say that this is another story that sounds like things that might happen in California and that would never happen in Texas. Because in Texas, while one of the Montanas was doing all this negotiating with this woman, the other one would have come out with a little something I like to call the tiebreaker. That baby wasn't going nowhere. They weren't going to need to be no wrestling. No, that baby would have been placed down very slowly before hands went up in the air.
Yeah, it's like, was this kidnapper woman like walking from door to door trying to see if she could get inside? Was this more targeted? We don't necessarily know the details.
Great question, because I feel like if I broke into Joe Montana's house, like there's so much valuable stuff that you could steal before you got to the baby. Just a thought.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bomani. For the social segment this week, you thought it was a good time for the game was cheating. Is there something that brought this up for you? Something that reminded you of it? Because it's certainly one of the show favorites.
Oh, yeah, because the Falcons just, like, if I rooted for the Falcons, I would think the game was cheating. Like, the mere fact that they was up 26-10 and everybody was like, yeah, but they still going to lose. You know what I'm saying? Like, that, like the computer assistance was going to kick in, except the computer isn't computer assistance with the Falcons. It's just who they are. They're just losers.
And losers in real life as opposed to a video game, right?
Yeah. I mean, the real, as I've told you before, the real losers are the people that keep allowing their hearts to be broken by the Falcons. Like that, I mean, those are some first-class losers. And I know that they're first-class losers because they get so mad when I say that they're losers. And, like, generally, you know who gets mad when they get called a loser? Losers. And I need you to understand, man, it takes a lot for me to call somebody a loser.
Well, we got some more losers here because seemingly everybody on the game is cheating side lost in one way or another. Our first comes from TA in Alabama.
I'm playing 2K, NBA 2K, and I'm playing the Warriors. Steph, Clay, you know how it go. I'm up 25 in the fourth quarter, thinking I'm finna cruise to a victory. All of a sudden, the game start doing what it do, cheating. Clay ends up with 28 in the fourth quarter alone. Curry ends up with another 17 in the fourth quarter. Somehow, I lose by 14 points in the fourth quarter. I threw my controller at my brand new bought 55-inch screen TV. Cracked the screen. I'm trying to explain to my wife why I got to buy a new TV. So let's just say I don't play 2K anymore.
Yo, I love that this started off sounding like the Quiet Storm. And then it just started stormy. It's your boy, Jay Smooth, on 98.7. The beat, and then it went from there. But I can't imagine he gave up 45 points to only the two of them. I'd be furious. And you know what? The game was cheating, except the game was cheating in the other way. The game was cheating when it let them build the lead.
All right, this next one comes from Kenny in Chicago.
I was playing one of the old WWE wrestling games back on the PS2 days. I'm facing Triple H in a title match. He's the best character in the game. I'm the Rock. So the match going on for like 10 minutes. It's just a regular match. All of a sudden, I try to hit the Rock Bottom. The computer counters it like 2-3 times. Finally, 10 minutes into the match, I get the Rock Bottom in. but the game glitches. And next thing you know, Triple H phases out of the move, and he's in the corner doing nothing. I'm playing as The Rock. The Rock is still in the animation of doing the Rock Bottom as if someone was still there. The Invisible Man was getting Rock Bottomed. So The Rock hits the ground and collapses because he ain't hit nothing but the mat. So he knocked out, and then Triple H just decides to do the heel move and just walk over there and pin him right afterwards. 1, 2, 3. Game over. The game cheated me bad, bro. I want to throw that controller as soon as my friend saw it.
Yo, I love the detail that everyone remembers in these moments where the game was cheap. They know everything that happened.
Standing in the corner, just watching them do it.
He did a Rock Bottom to nothing. I would have lost my mind.
And there were some good WWE ones. Like, you don't hear about the WWE game as much as you hear, like, Madden, right?
Yeah, but look, my homeboys used to love the WWE game so much that they would get high and watch the computer play. And this is on, like, the Nintendo 64. We're not even talking about these high-class graphics of today.
It's not that much different from real life, right? Because it's all a game.
Fair point.
All right, this next one comes from Randall in Austin, but I got a bonus one for us on the backhand side.
Probably about 5 years ago, I used to play a lot of video games with my son when he was younger. We got the new Mortal Kombat, and, you know, I work. So, you know, he's staying at home and getting real good, you know. So when I come home, he's just tanning me up, just tanning me up, tanning me up, tanning me up. Couldn't do nothing with him, but he's talking a lot of junk, too. So I sent his ass to bed early, right? I stayed up all night until about, I don't know, maybe 2:30 in the morning. Got my combinations down, woke him up. Came down, back downstairs, let's do it. He couldn't do nothing with me, just everything around, just bam, 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 just housing him. But what he didn't know is that I switched out his controller with the bad controller that was in the box. But, you know, whatever. He shouldn't have been talking junk.
Hold on, the game wasn't cheating. You was cheating. It wasn't enough that you went and worked on your craft. You had to give him the bad controller? Yo, Wow, that's a Simpsons episode, by the way. Getting destroyed by your son and then deciding that you're going to go into the dungeon and work on your craft so you can come back and give him to work. That's season one of The Simpsons with maybe my favorite line in the history of The Simpsons. So basically, the whole episode goes, Bart was killing Homer at arcade boxing, right? Destroying him. And this was the first season of The Simpsons. That's before they reined Bart in. This is when Bart was at the height of his disrespect. And he just whooping Homer's ass. Homer goes to an arcade with a pocket full of change and, like, gets his craft up and then comes home and is beating the dog out of Bart. Mud hole status, right? Just whooping him, just whooping him, just whooping him. And then Marge, for a reason that's kind of heartwarming but doesn't matter right now, unplugs the game. And Homer loses his mind because the game gets unplugged. And then Bart looks over and says, I would like to announce my retirement undefeated from video boxing.
The, like, whack controller thing. That is such a relatable topic because there's always one good controller and there's always one bad controller. And no matter who gets stuck with the bad controller, you cannot overcome it.
Yeah. No. Don't let the X button click, right? Like, or whichever one, they get whatever your system of choice, the button that matters, like the one right there in the middle, do not let that get sticky.
I decided to include a bonus one because there were so many good ones. And this last one is really something else. It's from Sean in San Diego.
Calling about a time the game was cheating, and it wasn't in regards to me. It was 1993, a house full of roommates, five of us, and we enjoyed playing Madden. One day, the roommates are all in the basement playing the game. Two homies on the sticks. And one is claiming that the game is cheating. He winds up losing a close game. And, you know, back then, this is when we were, you know, we're young cats. We'd do anything we could to make the game fun. We would make aluminum foil Super Bowl rings after we won our tournaments that we created. And he lost a close game to a homie. My man proceeded to take the game out of the Sega Genesis, take it in the backyard, pull out the tool, his 380, and shoot the game. He had to go out and buy another game so we could continue the tournament. That's my memory of the time that the game was cheating.
Bust the cap in the game.
Look, man, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. Game. Oh, man. Wow. Gabe, yeah, I'm discombobulated. My man Gabe Bassay handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to our, if you haven't heard, contributors. Thanks to Jeffrey Fowler of the Washington Post. Check out his story on Amazon Ring security drone. Wow. Thanks to Laurel Wamsley of NPR. Check out her story about a rat that is actually a hero and not a rat like a snitch, like a rat like a rat. And thanks to Michael Babcock of TMZ. Check out his story on Joe Montana confronting a kidnapper at his Malibu home on TMZ.com. Wow. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us. Review us. Give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm a client. Believe you are a hater. Gabe, that dude took a 380 to a video game cartridge.
Are you holding the game? Is the game in the corner of the yard and then you're shooting the game? I feel like I need more.
Yeah. All right, you guys. Yeah, just take it easy, man. We got a lot to think about. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.